There's a better world is a coming, tell you why. There's a better world is a coming, tell you why. We will beat 'em on the land, on the sea and in the sky. There's a better world is a coming, tell you why. There's a better world is a coming, don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world is a coming, don't you see?
Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. This is Rick Spezak, news director for Progressive News Network. And we've got a really good interview with you today of Mr. Alan Clendenin, vice chair of the Democratic Party. Let me bring him right on. Vice Chair Clendenin,
good morning,
welcome,
Rick.
Sir.
Thank you for having me back.
Oh, it's our pleasure, sir. It's our pleasure. As always, we have an interesting Democratic season in front of us. So much going on, so many issues. Before we get into the issues that we face right now, I wondered, sir, if you could give me just a little bit of your background. What was it that caused you to become more than just another person working for a living, trying to raise a family, help their friends, put a roof over your head? What made you step up and try to make this a better world, sir?
You know, I got that little bit of a bug in a hand back when I was a teenager. I grew up in Central Florida. I became involved in the presidential campaign, Jimmy Carter's presidential campaign. And really from that point, there was no looking back. And, you know, like everyone in politics, you know, their level of energy, commitment, and time involved, you know, it has peaks and valleys. But recently, the state of Florida and our communities have just taken such a tailspin, and a quality of life that we live in, and the type of leadership that, or lack of leadership that we've had in this state, really has lit a fire under me over the last few years to get more heavily involved and be involved at the Democratic Party level, is I believe that's the best opportunity we have of changing the dynamic of this state, and of course electing legislators and electing a governor that reflects the values of the people of the state of Florida.
Well, that's super. You know, I know we had an energetic campaign for party leadership, and you were up there slugging with the best of them, and of course now we're all pulling together to make democratic progress in this state. If you were to try to characterize one or two of the biggest challenges for the Democratic Party in Florida for this next gubernatorial election, what would you say those challenges are, sir?
That we represent a very large state. It's the third largest state now in the nation. It is diverse in every sense of the word, both in demographically and in the geography of our state. The multiple media markets, the very expensive media markets. And while there's a lot of people that come together with a lot of passion and issues that, you know, we all share these common values, over 3.5 million Democrats live in the state of Florida. And then put that with the Democratic or progressive-leaning independents, it's difficult to reach out and bring all of those folks together to really press upon them that they can make a difference. And as we saw in 2010, while we were right on the issues and we had the best candidates on the ballot, we were not able to communicate with the voters of the state of Florida effectively to convince them that they needed to take time away from their work, take time away from their families, and leave their houses to go to the polls and cast a ballot. And that is, once again, going to be our biggest challenge in 2014 and all the municipal elections that we have coming up, which I want to make sure everybody understands are probably some of the most important elections that we have in front of us. Our municipal elections, that we have to convince our friends, our neighbors, and our families that these elections are all important and why they're important. And look at, we can just look back of what's happened in the state of Florida over the last few years and the anti-worker policies, the anti-senior citizen policies, the attack against college students and and of course, most recently, this governor's veto of a critical piece of legislation that would have just provided some fairness to children that have been brought to this country as youth in allowing them to get driver's license.
You know, we have this curious problem with the legislature that can, on the one hand, provide themselves low-cost health insurance, but can't seem to find the compassion in their hearts to provide any even access to free federal money to get health care for the electorate. How do you think the Democratic Party can effectively address this and bring this to the attention of what is clearly a distracted electorate here in Florida?
Well, if anyone has been paying attention to what's happened to this, the Republican Party, or the opposition party in our state, and really our nation, the hypocrisy shouldn't surprise anyone. If you could claim anything about what's been happening on the other side of the political spectrum, hypocrisy would probably be the word that comes to mind across every single policy that they've advocated for. And healthcare is absolutely is one of them. You know, they've got theirs, but they don't care about who doesn't. Look at Will Weatherford, and right here in the state of Florida, when we were discussing the expansion of Medicare, lying to the people of the state of Florida, and really, practically speaking, getting away with it. You know, he backtracked and corrected his stance that, you know, his family had not benefited from these programs, when in fact, if it hadn't been for these programs, his family would have been devastated. So these social safety nets are important to all Americans. They're not just important to Democrats, Republicans, or independents. It's important to all Americans, but the Republican Party continues to be the voice of greed, selfishness, and hypocrisy.
Well, let me ask you another question. This is sort of the theme of today's show is Democrats, big D, little D. And the idea here was to talk about, you know, kind of everything from the grassroots, municipal, and county level, which you've addressed, to the state and the national level. There was just recently an article in the Wall Street Journal purporting to be talking about rule to purge moderates, which sounds to me like a nice subtle way of attacking the Democratic Party. Now, somewhere between getting political leaders to pull together versus a purge, isn't it important that the Democratic Party leaders work together for mutually agreed upon goals?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have to reach some types of consensus across our basic core values that represent our party, as a party, and how we identify ourselves. And I think it's important for our party leadership, both our elected party leadership in our legislators and our executive positions of government, as well as our internal Democratic Party leaders, to use those leadership skills to persuade, convince, and congeal everyone to get on the same page. And on the notion of, you know, it's been discussed, you know, purges, and these are kinds of words that people use to incite. It's in sell papers or push people towards their blogs. There's no purging involved in this party. The Florida Democratic Party is the big tent party. There's room for various people from a wide spectrum of views. You know, this state of Florida is an extremely diverse state, and the values that are not the same in certain issues in the southern parts of the state as they are in the northern panhandle areas, and we have to make room for the divergence of all these views so we can come together and make the best policies that represent the greatest amount of good for the greatest amount of people.
You know, it seems curious to me, the Republicans seem intent on driving away women, driving away Hispanics. You know, you wonder who in God's name is their audience. I heard just recently
they can't help themselves.
We heard the news.
And quite frankly, you know, this is a party that they have this unholy alliance with a small minority of individuals that they are so codependent upon for financing and political strength and support, that are in such opposition to core American values like the inclusiveness and fairness and making sure that we don't have this type of discrimination in our society. They are tied so close with these people, they won't let them off. They won't let them off the hook. So they continuously, every year that goes by, they paint themselves into a smaller and smaller corner. And I don't see this changing. It's interesting to see how Senator Marco Rubio has attempted to break some of those chains, but as try as he might, he is still firmly hooked on the party that still represents racism in the state of Florida.
Well, I understand he's both for and against the immigration improvements.
Well, you know, that's what he's attempting to do, but his party continues to push him back, and again, he's setting the hook deeper and deeper to keep him from breaking ranks.
You know, there was some very unfortunate news for our good friends, the Republicans, this past weekend in Palm Beach. I don't know if you heard it, but it seems that the Palm Beach Republican Party is so strapped for funds, they've actually had to close their offices. And I know you'll join with me.
We've discussed before. I am of 100% mind that how we're going to change the state of Florida is not going to be from Tallahassee or the highest levels of this party or the state. That if we're going to truly change the trajectory of the state, this gerrymandered state, it's going to be from the bottom up and from Democrats that live in neighborhoods and cities and towns and counties, and they're all going to come together. So anything that we can do to bolster the grassroots efforts, the local organizations and clubs and caucuses, we really have to put policies together that build these teams from the bottom so that we can sustain statewide electoral success.
Let me ask you a somewhat difficult question. I'll try not to put any real stingers in it, but this question comes up when a lot of Democrats get together. The question is this. Obviously, when you have multiple contending candidates within a race, that there's going to be some friction. There's going to be some difficulty. I'm talking about the race for governor this coming year. In the past, too many times under older leadership, there's been this blessing from above, and candidates have been sort of invited off the ticket, and we've avoided primaries for a long time. I understand the negative side of primaries. They do cause some friction and some division, but there is also a positive side that the public gets a chance to weigh in. Where do you fall, if I can ask you that question, where do you fall on the primary, no primary, primary is a good idea, primary is a bad idea? Where do you fall on that spectrum, sir?
My opinion has never changed. It's based on some of the same observations that you just highlighted. I believe that a primary process is critical to the electoral success of our party in the state of Florida. That there's 3.5 million Democrats that are over 3.5 million Democrats that are registered to vote in the state of Florida, and those individuals should be able to evaluate the background experience of the individuals that have put their names out there to be the governor of the state of Florida, and make that determination of who they want to represent the party on the ticket in the general election. I think that the party infrastructure is there. We as Democrats, both at the local and state level, should be there to provide the organization and infrastructure to allow whoever is the nominee of the state to run a successful general election campaign. So while our primary candidates can be out there communicating and talking to voters and building support, we as a party at the local level and at the state level need to be registering voters, organizing precincts, and getting together what we need to get together to run a successful general election campaign. And that work starts now.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let me ask you one more question, and this is another one of those difficult ones. as you said, you know, we have a very divided electorate. We have a very independent electorate. We do have more Democrats registered in Florida than Republicans. And yet, Florida was somehow snookered into putting this guy Scott into office, who clearly was part of a corporation that took advantage of federal funds. Now, granted, he was not convicted. His corporation was certainly found guilty of some problems and taking these federal monies. You know, if the Florida electorate would put this guy into office, now they had a chance to see him, what is it going to take to educate the Floridian electorate to make sure that the same mistake is not made again? What do you think?
Well, one, let's not forget the reason why he is still in the governor's mansion and not sitting in a much smaller location as he pleaded the fifth. So we always have to keep that in mind. Second is I'm not going to say that we put this gentleman into the, and I use gentleman lightly, into the governor's mansion. We did it only because, not because we had the support of the majority of people in the state of Florida, but it's because the apathy level and people didn't believe that the elections made a difference. And you know, and of course, and like everything, hindsight's 2020. You can look back and we can do our little autopsy report on the government race and see what went right and what went wrong. But that's what we have to look forward in 2014. Is understand people think that this man is an unpopular governor. He is. He thinks we know that his policies have been not good for the people of the state of Florida, the economy of the state of Florida, and the future of the state of Florida. But what we can't do is think that everybody, since everybody seems to know that and his approval ratings are still in the tank, everybody understands that, everybody knows it, but that's got to translate to people leaving their jobs, leaving their homes, taking time from school to go to the polls to vote. And that is going to be the difference of whether we are going to give this man another 4 years to wreck so many advances that have been made over the decades of the working condition of the people of Florida, or we're going to elect a Democratic governor who's going to be able to dig us out of the hole that this man has continued to create and put us back onto the state where we should be at the top of every rating poll in the country rather than the bottom that we still continue to exist in education and innovation.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Clendenin. I wish you the best of luck and much success, and thank you for spending some time with us today.
I look forward to talking to you. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was Alan Clendenin, Vice Chair of the Democratic Party of Florida, and I want to play just a little bit of music, and then we'll do a little bit of news, and that'll be it for today.
I don't want your millions, mister. I don't want your diamond ring. What I want is the right to live, mister. Give me back my job again.
Now I don't want your Rolls Royce, mister. I don't want your pleasure yacht. All I want, just food for my baby, is to me my old job back. We work to build this country, mister, while you enjoyed a life of stolen all that we built, mister. Now our children starve and freeze. So
I don't want your millions, mister. I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is the right to live, mister. Give me back.
Call me green or blue or red. This one thing I sure know, mister, my hungry babies must be fed. Take the two old parties, mister, no difference in them I can see. But with a farmer labor party, we could set the people free. So
I don't want your millions, mister.
Well, that was, I don't want your millions, mister. Well, everybody's talking about the spy or not the spy or who tells what and who knows what. And it seems that the story kind of boils down to, hey, it's no big deal. Everybody knows they're spying on everything. Seems that everybody's forgotten about the Fourth Amendment. And look it up, friends, look it up. And at the same time, it's terrible. Oh, my God. So which way is it, my friends? Everybody knows and it's no surprise, or it's terrible, it's huge, it's terrible. Nobody's ever heard of such a thing. Oh, my God. And, of course, yeah, they're not really listening. That's why you see all these infiltrations and the arrests of all those terrible people reporting the mistreatment of animals. They call that terrorism now, instead of what Sinclair Lewis did, which was to expose what goes on at slaughterhouses. And of course, when ecologists are gathering together to meet and talk about the pollution of our environment, that, my friends, that is terrorism too. But we've got these news stories for you. The Palm Beach County GOP runs out of money. Staff laid off. Ira Sabin, chairman of the Republican Party of Palm Beach County, said the party is downsizing. It seems they've had their brain shrunk already, and they figure they might as well match it with their offices. Cash-strapped, crippled by poor fundraising, the Republican Party of Palm Beach County has closed its West Palm Beach offices. Now, when you think about how many right-wing kooks live in Palm Beach County, it's kind of shocking, isn't it, that they can't even support their own rabid mouthpieces. Political Director Mark Hotch and Executive Director Kathy Bradenburg, Party Chairman Ira Sabin confirmed Sunday to the BizPAC Review, "We're downsizing," said Sabin, "until we can put it so small it'll fit in a bathtub and we can drown it." Oh, wait, no, that was government. After serving as treasurer of the county party for 2 years, Sabin was narrowly elected chairman in a close, some say rigged vote. Now the Republican Party of Palm Beach County is out of money. Sabin been plagued by controversy since taking the reins, probably in more ways than one, from former 10-year chairman Sid Dinnerstein. Rumors have circulated for months that Sabin's abrasive personality have alienated the party's major longtime donors. Abrasive personality? What? A Republican? Are you kidding? Evidence of the local GOP fundraising inexperience began earlier this year when, at the height of planning the all-important Lincoln Day dinner, Sabin abruptly fired then-executive director Susanna Barash and replaced her with Brandenburg. Multiple sources told BizPAC Review the long-standing practice of selling Lincoln Day tickets by the table to bigger donors was pretty much ignored this year, helping to explain why the local party made little money at its biggest fundraiser. Oh, yes, indeedy, friends. So, well, there's more of that. But anyway, on the good news side, join us at the Stonewall Pride Parade for the LGBT community. And this is in Wilton Manors on Saturday, June 22nd, 7 p.m. The meetup is at the Tropic Restaurant and Piano Bar, 2000 Wilton Drive, Wilton Manors, 33305. Broward County Legislative Delegation is holding a town hall meeting on health care. Oh, yeah, probably the Republicans won't be there because, of course, they don't believe in health care except for their own. Planned Parenthood will be attending a town hall meeting to discuss the failure of the Florida legislature to pass health care expansion for working families,
even though their own insurance is doing very fine. Thank you very much.
We need volunteers to ask questions in order to show support for women's health care. We prepare you with information and questions and a Planned Parenthood t-shirt. That'll be Tuesday, June 25th at 6 p.m., Broward County Governmental Center, 115 South Andrews Avenue, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33301. And you can RSVP to public affairs at ppsoflo.org. And don't forget, it's coming up as National HIV Testing Day. And this story is going to have some more legs, that's for sure. Which internet company hasn't given the U.S. government its records? Well, it seems there's only one. Outraged internet users searching for an alternative to privacy-busting companies they've trusted are turning to a company that provides what it calls the world's most private search engine, StartPage.com, and its sister search engine, IXQuick.com, were launched in 2006 to staunchly defend their users' privacy and civil liberties. StartPage provides a private portal to Google results, while IXQuick provides private results from other search engines. The services have not participated in PRISM, nor have they ever provided user data to the U.S. government or any other government or agency in the U.S. or anywhere in the world. That's more than nine of the biggest internet companies: Apple, Google, Microsoft, Yahoo, Facebook, YouTube, PalTalk, AOL, and Skype can say. Privacy of our users rests on three important foundations, explained StartPage and IXQuick CEO Robert Beans. We are based in Netherlands. We use encrypted connections, and most importantly, we don't store or share any of our users' personal search data. No user data stored. StartPage and IXQuick never store user data, including IP addresses, search queries, so the government agencies have no incentive to ask. Privacy is so complete, the company doesn't even know who its customers are. It can't share anything with Big Brother. Encrypted HTTPS connections, StartPage and IXQuick were the first search engines to use automatic encryption of all connections to prevent snooping. When searches are encrypted, third parties like ISPs and NSA cannot eavesdrop on internet connections to see what people are searching for. Not under U.S. jurisdiction, StartPage and IXQuick are based in the Netherlands, so they're not directly subject to U.S. regulation, warrants, or court orders. They can't be forced to participate in spying programs like PRISM. The company has never turned over a single bit of user data to any government or entity in the last 14 years it's been in business, which is not surprising since there's no data there. But we'll have more information on this. We're going to be doing an interview with one of the leaders of StartPage and IXQuick in the next couple days. So stick around, ladies and gentlemen. Look for the interview with Dr. Albrecht, who will give us more information about that. Also, this news just in, tomorrow, this is Wednesday the 12th, by gum, that's today, Miami tells Obama no KXL. President Obama's coming to town. We want him to be there to greet him with a clear message: reject the Keystone XL pipeline. Last time the president was in Miami, we can pull together an amazing rally in Miami Port with us in 40 hours notice. Time to do it again. We can't let up on Keystone. The president, it can be said, he has delayed it. He has delayed it indeed. So that polluting dill bit just hasn't percolated its way all the way south of Texas yet. But of course, I'm sure you've already forgotten that there's that big spill in Arkansas, which hasn't been cleaned up, or that other big spill up in Minnesota, which hasn't been cleaned up yet. But that's okay. Everything's all right. Watch this hand. Oh, look, a shiny object. So, also on the news front, we have some other interesting stories for you. But let me put this little tune on for you. I know you'll like this.
"10 million soldiers to the war have gone, who may never return again. 10 million mothers' hearts must break for the one who died in vain. Heads bowed down in sorrow, in her lonely years. I heard a mother murmur through her tears. I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier. I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
And joy, who dared to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot some other mother's darling boy. Let change and love erase their future troubles. It's time to lay the sword and gun away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier. What victory can cheer a mother's heart when she looks at her blighted home? What victory can bring her back all she cares to call her own? Let each mother answer in the years to be, remember that my boy belongs to me. I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
And joy, who dared to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot some other mother's darling boy. Let nations arbitrate their future troubles. It's time to lay the sword and gun away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier. I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
And joy, who dared to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot some other mother's darling boy. Let nations arbitrate their future troubles. It's time to lay the sword and gun away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
So that was a big hit from 1915. I'm sure you all remember it very well. That was just before the war to end all wars, what they also called the Great War, also AKA World War I, and a charming war that it was. But this was the big hit of 1915 because not everybody really thinks war is a hell of a good thing, except, of course, the arms manufacturers who do make a mint on all that blood and gore and death. Hey, how about that? A couple more stories I want to share with you today. This is an op-ed from Daniel Ellsberg, who was made notorious for his leaking of the Pentagon Papers, which were top secret, much higher grade of secrecy than Private Manning's release of information. And again, just like Manning, he was threatened with basically life in prison, if not death, for telling tales out of school, for letting people know what the government was actually up to. And, of course, we have the examples of both Mr. Manning and Mr. Snowden now, who also thought that the public should know what our government is up to. That's an important thing. And, in fact, there's actually a treaty that says if you under arms as a soldier know of war crimes, you have to release that information. But here is an Ellsberg editorial written for The Guardian, and I want to share this with you because I think he makes some very important points. This is Daniel Ellsberg writing in The Guardian. In my estimation, there has not been in American history a more important leak than Edward Snowden's release of the NSA material, and that definitely includes the Pentagon Papers 40 years ago. Snowden's whistleblowing gives us the possibility to roll back a key part of what has amounted to an executive coup against the U.S. Constitution. Since 9/11, there has been, at first secretly but increasingly openly, a revocation of the Bill of Rights for which this country fought over 200 years ago. In particular, the Fourth and Fifth Amendments of the U.S. Constitution, which safeguard citizens from unwarranted intrusion by the government into their private lives, has been virtually suspended. The government claims it has a court warrant under FISA But that unconstitutionally sweeping warrant is from a secret court, shielded from effective oversight, almost totally deferential to executive requests. As Russell Tice, a former National Security Agency analyst, put it, it's a kangaroo court with a rubber stamp. For the president then to say there is judicial oversight is nonsense. It is the alleged oversight function of the intelligence committees in Congress. Not for the first time, as with issues of torture, kidnapping, detention, assassination by drones and death squads, they have shown themselves to be thoroughly co-opted by the agencies they supposedly monitor. There are also black holes for information that the public needs to know. The fact that congressional leaders were, quote, briefed, unquote, on this and went along with it without any open debate, hearing, staff analysis, or real chance for effective dissent only shows how broken the system of checks and balances is in this country. Obviously, the United States is not now a police state, but given the extent of this invasion of people's privacy, we do have a full electronic and legislative infrastructure of such a state. If, for instance, there was now a war that led to a large-scale anti-war movement, like the one we had against the war in Vietnam, or more likely if we suffered one more attack on the scale of 9/11, I fear for our democracy. These powers are extremely dangerous. There are both legitimate reasons for secrecy and specifically for secrecy about communication intelligence. That's why Bradley Manning and I, both of whom had access to such intelligence with clearances higher than top secret, chose not to disclose any information with that classification. And that is why Edward Snowden has committed himself to withhold publication of most of what he might have revealed. But what is not legitimate is to use a secrecy system to hide programs that are blatantly unconstitutional in their breadth and potential abuse. Neither the president nor Congress as a whole may be by themselves revoke the Fourth Amendment. That's why what Snowden has revealed so far was secret from the American people. In 1975, Senator Frank Church spoke of the National Security Agency in these terms. I know the capacity that is there to make tyranny total in America, and we must see to it that this agency and all agencies that possess this technology operate within the law and under proper supervision so that we never cross over that abyss. That is the abyss from which there is no return. The dangerous prospect of which he warned was that America's intelligence gathering capability, which is today beyond any comparison with what existed in this pre-digital era, at any time could be turned around on the American people and no American would have any privacy left. That has now happened. That is what Snowden has exposed with official secret documents. The NSA, the FBI, the CIA have with this new technology surveillance powers over our own citizens that the Stasi, the secret police in the former, quote, Democratic Republic, unquote, from East Germany could scarcely have dreamed of. Snowden reveals that the so-called intelligence community has become the United Stasi of America. So we have fallen into Senator Church's abyss. The questions now are whether he was right or wrong that there is no return from it, and whether that means that effective democracy will become impossible. A week ago, I would have found it hard to argue with pessimistic answers to those conclusions. But with Edward Snowden having put his life on the line to get this information out, quite possibly inspiring others with similar knowledge, conscience, and patriotism to show comparable civic courage in the public, in Congress, in the executive branch itself, I see the unexpected possibility of a way up and out of the abyss. Pressure by an informed public on Congress to form a select committee to investigate the revelations by Snowden and, I hope others to come, might lead us to bring the NSA and the rest of the intelligence community under real supervision and restraint and restore the protections of the Bill of Rights. Snowden did what he did because he recognized the NSA's surveillance program for what they are, dangerous, unconstitutional activity. This wholesale invasion of Americans and foreign citizens' privacy does not contribute to our security. It puts in danger the very liberties we are trying to protect. For immediate release. This story on another front entirely. This is a story about fracking now coming to Florida. This is from a colleague of ours, Anita Stewart, on the West Coast, dated June 10th, 2013. Homeowners are alarmed at plans now afoot to drill and frack a 13,900-foot deep exploratory well within 1,000 feet of the residences in the Golden Gate community outside of Naples, Florida. Residents living within a square mile of the intended site first learned about this when they received a frightening notice from a company called Total Safety, Inc., requesting emergency contact information from each household so they could formulate an evacuation plan in the event of an explosion or a toxic chemical release. Let me read that again. Big Oil comes to Florida's Everglades with the intent to drill and frack 1,000 feet from homes, Tampa, Florida, June 10, 2013. Homeowners are alarmed over plans now afoot to drill and frack a 13,900-foot deep exploratory well within 1,000 feet of the residences in the Golden Gate community outside of Naples, Florida. Residents living within a square mile of the intended site first learned about this when they received a frightening notice from a company called Total Safety, Inc., man, requesting emergency contact information from each household so they could formulate an evacuation plan in the event of an explosion or toxic chemical release. Total Safety has been hired by Dan A. Hughes Company, which has recently signed a leasing agreement from the Collier family, which owns the mineral rights to this massive onshore oil reserve known as the Sunnyland Trend. The trend stretches from Fort Myers to Miami and intersects one of the most pristine protected preserves and natural areas in the nation, the beloved Everglades. Transparency is key to a government buy-in for the people, stated Anita Stewart, co-chair of the Green Party of Florida. They have been planning this and getting their permits for months now, all in secret. Then they spring it on it as they're ready to start drilling. Residents have organized an emergency grassroots effort to stop the drilling and fracking before it begins and to shut down the permitting process. They've called an emergency town hall meeting for Tuesday, June 11th, 2013, at 5 p.m. and created a website called Preserve Our Paradise, a Facebook page, and a petition on change.org. Organizer Joe D. Mule stated that while the permit does not mention activities consistent with hydraulic fracturing or fracking, the toxic chemicals routinely used are probably the same or similar to what will be used at the planned site. They are kept secret under the guise of proprietary restriction. The end result will be the same: illness and death, the die-off of flora and fauna, and the poisoning of our air, soil, and water. From the platform of the Green Party of the United States, we believe that no one, including people of color and the poor, should be poisoned or subjected to harmful levels of toxic chemicals, and that no group of people should bear a disproportionate share of the pollution from industrial, governmental, and commercial sources or policies. Uphold the precautionary principle requiring polluters to bear the burden of proof in demonstrating the safety of their practices. Expand the application of the precautionary principle from chemicals and health to land use, waste, energy, food policy, and local economic development. Facilitate procedural justice, ensuring the public's right to know. Ensure the rules and regulations are transparent to help communities employ their rights and participate in decision-making. Provide information in languages appropriate to the affected communities. The Green Party of Florida calls for an immediate switch to alternative sources of energy, such as solar, wind, and geothermal. And I invite you to stay tuned to Progressive News Network, because we are having an environmental show coming up in the weeks ahead. So make sure you tune in. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we have just one more little bit of music, and then we're going to call it a day. And I want to thank you so much for joining us. And this is our friend, the great Paul Robeson, singing Joe Hill.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Is I but Joe, here 10 years dead, I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, did I, and standing by my bed, they framed you on a murder charge, said Joe, but I'm dead, says Joe, but I'm dead. know. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life, and smiling near his eyes, says Joe, what hate can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, there you find your hill. There you find your hill. I saw your hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but don't. You're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. I never died, says he.
That great old organizing song, Joe Hill. Yeah, incredible. I want to invite you to tune in this Sunday night for our show, Democrat, Big D, Little D. We'll be talking to Democratic activists from the grassroots level up to party level. And we've got Dr. Rachel Pienta. We've got Ed Mattson. Dr. Pienta is a county Democratic leader from the north central part of the state. Ed Mattson is a former county official in the Martin County area. Edwin Enciso is a Hispanic immigrant activist and a progressive Democratic leader. And we've got Tabitha Frazier, who is also a wonderful Hispanic Democrat and progressive leader. And we'll have Sally Phillips, who is a leader with the LGBT caucus, and also a great progressive Democrat, and Alan Clendenin, the first vice chair of the Florida Democratic Party, who you just heard a few minutes ago. Well, thanks a lot. I'm glad you could tune in. This is News Director Rick Spezak telling you that PNN focuses on bringing the voices of progressive activists from across the state and across the nation to let you know things that you would not otherwise hear, to bring you the voices of progressives so that you know there are people working every day to make this a better world. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, it's a jungle out there. Keep up the good work, and we will make this a better world.